Hello, everyone. This is the second Sunday of our physical separation from each other. I always enjoyed the song, Blessed Be the Tie That Binds. And one verse says, when we asunder part, it gives us inward pain, but we shall still be joined in heart and hope to meet again. And so that's what I'm hoping. We're all hoping that this separation that we have, this temporary, is going to cause us to appreciate even more the times that we are together, and in fact, cause us to look forward to that times when we can all assemble again. Last Sunday, I uploaded an audio sermon of a series of lessons that I'm going to be doing during this time entitled Guard Your Heart. And that particular lesson was guarding your heart against fear, and there was an audio of that uploaded. For this week, I'm going to also upload an audio of this particular lesson, but also this video is going to be available to all of you who are on Facebook, and I think that it can be a link can be given to you so that even if you're not a Facebook member, you can see this if you choose. I don't know why you would choose to look at me, but it's the same lesson in both cases. This week, I'm going to be talking about guarding your heart against idolatry. And it might be easy to think that idolatry is not a problem anymore in our society, in Bible times, and even in some places still today. People are worshiping idols. They're very much out there where everyone can see them. They are physical things representing God or gods. And the worship that they give to them is overt and it's public. But we need to realize how subtle Satan can be. We may not be eating the forbidden fruit of the garden, but we may be placing way too much emphasis on or pursuing to an excessive degree the good things that God has provided for us. And if we're placing those good things that God has given to us forward in our lives and ahead of God, then that is something that we need to guard our hearts against, because that is, in fact, what idolatry is placing things before God. So idolatry, and I think most of us could probably describe or define idolatry if asked. The dictionary definition of that is idolatry is the worship of an idol or cult image, being a physical image such as a statue or a person in place of God. I will broaden that because I believe that it's the worship of something or something other than God, as if it were God or as if it was the God of your life. So here's God in the sense of the creator, the one who's in control of our lives, the one that controls everything that happens in our lives. And if we're giving what is due to the God of heaven to someone else or to something else, that thing or that person is getting all of our attention, our energy, our time, then that is a violation of the first commandment that is recorded for us in Exodus, the 20th chapter, in verse 3. You shall have no other gods before me. Idolatry among God's people, there is a long and storied history of that sin recorded for us in scriptures. Actually, the first case of idolatry is seen with Rachel, Jacob's wife, in Genesis chapter 31 and verse 19, as Jacob and his two wives and their children are setting about fleeing from Laban, Rachel and Leah's father. We're told that Rachel stole her father's household gods. That's again in Genesis 31 and verse 19. We see idolatry brought up again in the land of Egypt. We have pointed out many times that the 10 plagues were particularly aimed at the 10 major gods of the Egyptians. As the Israelites have been released and are heading towards the promised land, they are constantly being warned against the idols of the Canaanites even before they enter into the land. After they've conquered the land, and Joshua tells the people to put away the gods from beyond the river. Those would be Rachel's, the gods that Rachel brought and that they apparently kept in their family, and told them to reject the gods of the Amorites. And as you know, the famous statement, for me and my house, we will serve the Lord, we will serve Yahweh. However, after Joshua and all those people died, we get to the book of Judges and we read of the Israelites worshiping those very gods of the Amorites, the Asherah and the Baals, and God's punishment of them when they rejected him, and then the judges coming in and delivering them, and that whole vicious downward spiral of sin. When we come to Solomon, we read that Solomon built idol temples for his wives, many wives. And then, of course, when God took the 10 tribes away from him, gave them to Jeroboam, we read right away Jeroboam is setting up two calves that were representations of God, but still idolatry in Bethel and in Dan. And, of course, their idolatry and their continued idolatry into the Canaanite gods caused them to be taken into captivity. And then Judah is following right along with her northern sister, and is going to be carried into captivity as well. And again, one of the main reasons is because of their idolatry. One of the things that we often note is that this latter punishment, the Babylonian captivity, seems to have finally cured God's people of idolatry. But I think perhaps we're a bit too hasty in that, or at least we have limited our view of what idolatry consists of. Because when we get to the New Testament, Jesus and the apostles continue to warn against idolatry. If you go over to Luke chapter 12, and I'm not going to read the entirety of this because I think many of you are familiar with it, but in verses 13 through 21, after someone asked Jesus to force or encourage or insist on his brother sharing his inheritance, Jesus said in the middle of verse 14, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." And so we can't allow our possessions, or the abundance of those things, even the good things that God has given to us, to become the God of our lives. And then he gives, in the major part of this text, the parable of the rich fool who sat back and said, look what I've done, look what I've amassed for myself. You know, what I think I need to do is I need to tear down my barns, build even bigger barns and fill them up. And then I can say, soul, take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. You've got things forever. And in verse 20, God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself, but is not rich toward God." And so the problem with the rich fool is that his things became his God. They became the controlling interest of his life. They became the focus of his life. And he forgot about the God who gave him those things in the first place. Paul is also warning people about these same things in 1 Corinthians, the 6th chapter, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, and at verse 12, he said, "Everything is permissible for me, but not everything is beneficial. Everything is permissible for me, but I will not be mastered by anything." And again here, there are plenty of good things in our lives that God provides for us. There's entertainment, there's food, there's sleep, there's comfort, there's our jobs. And really the list of those things is as long as the things that might be those things that you desire, you know, however long that would be. And if we allow those things to become the controlling interest, the master of our lives, then they, in essence, become idols to us. The more famous passage by Paul is in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5, where he says, "Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature or to the flesh, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which Paul then says, which is idolatry. And so greed and covetousness, whatever your translation says there, is idolatry and is one of those things that needs to be put to death. And again, the only things that we could be greedy about or covetous about are, in large measure, good things that God has blessed us with. So it was not just an Old Testament problem. In fact, the danger of idolatry is still very real for you and I today. And so how do we guard our hearts against that? And that's what I want to spend the rest of our time looking at. And I want to give you four things. I'm going to be like the preacher or in Proverbs. Four things, yea, five things that are very important. And the number one thing, and this is not unusual, it's true of everything, is first of all, we have to be aware of the danger of idolatry in our lives. We're acutely aware of the danger of evils like lying, immorality, stealing, hatred, drunkenness. But as we pointed out, idolatry can focus on things that are otherwise good and great for us. So we still have to remain vigilant. And that kind of takes us back to Jesus' statement in Luke 12, where he says, watch out, or beware, be on your guard, because it requires us to be aware of potential dangers that are nearby to us. So we have to be aware that there is a possibility. And that just kind of puts the feelers out for us, the antenna, so that we can be sensitive to that. The second thing that we can do is we need to pay attention to our emotions. Being aware of the danger does not mean that we lock ourselves in a monastery and we fail to let our light shine, and that we just kind of, I'm so afraid of the possibility of the danger that we don't venture forth. 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 5 says, we demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. See, it's our heart that has all of its desires. That's where they take root, is in our heart. And so we have to control what comes into our heart, and we have to control what's there and what we allow to remain there. Emotions come in to this picture, because they tell us what's going on in our heart. If we are angry, probably it's because something we care about is under attack. If we're worried, that could be just a different kind of emotion for the same cause, that something that is important to us is in danger, whether it's our comfort, whether it's our health, and we're worried about that. If we're sorrowful, it can indicate that there's been the end, for instance, of a close relationship, or at least a drastic change in that relationship. And so emotions give us an insight into our hearts. But those same emotions can be an early warning of possible idolatry in our lives. When the things we desire are no longer looked upon as a gift, when we start to think about those things as things that belong to us, that we've earned or that we deserve, a right to be expected, it may be not only do we think of them as ours, but in that process of thinking that, we have actually allowed them to own us. And those emotions don't have to be negative, like sorrow or worry or anger that we talked about a moment ago. Listen, the rich fool was ecstatic over his wealth and gave himself to the joy of what he had accomplished rather than seeing it as God's gift to him. So in paying attention to those emotions that we have, we need to ask, why am I angry or worried or sorrowful right now? What is the cause of my joy? And in doing that, we are able to do what Paul recommends here, and that is that we take every thought captive and we bring it into subjection to God and allow God to be praised and glorified through them. The third thing that we can do is we need to compare our enjoyment of the blessings with our spiritual desires. What is taking up most of our thought time? What is taking up most of our activity time? Sometimes the enjoyment of the gifts and blessings of God that we have take up too much time. In fact, they compete with our fellowship with our brethren. They compete with our fellowship with God. And especially at times like we're experiencing right now with this separation, we have God's blessings all around us, and we can even find them in disturbing times like this. And listen, some of you have shared with me in conversations that we've had that you seem to be enjoying an increased connection with others, an increase in your prayers, an increase in your time in your Bible study. And over in Job, the 26th chapter, and you don't have to turn there in verse 14, when Job lists the blessings of God, he says that these are but the fringe, the outer fringe of his works. And so these blessings that God has provided for us in the interim here, or even in addition to what we're going through, that's just a tiny bit of what he has for us. But when idolatry, when these things eclipse God's face in our lives, and our spiritual desires for him and for the service of each other lessens, when prayer becomes a ritual, when Bible study becomes sort of a formal thing that we're involved in, and fellowship with God and with each other becomes or seems to be less urgent, and that happens as a result of allowing these things into our lives that are now controlling us, and they're mastering us. They now have become our gods. That's a telltale sign that idolatry is trying to make a place for itself in our hearts. The fourth one, and I think that this is a great guard that we can put up there against idolatry, is for us to ask the question, what if God takes this thing away from me or this person away from me? Listen, nothing will ferret out embryonic or even full-grown idolatry from our hearts faster than asking and answering that question. Just look at all the blessings in your life, your home, your car, your career, even your health or your life or your family. If God chose to take any one or all of those things away, what would your reaction be? Listen, the answer to that question and the answer that you give yourself to that question requires a level of honesty that we rarely permit ourselves. In Luke, the 14th chapter, Jesus was pretty plain. He said, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, his wife and children, his brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And I'm sure that you understand that the word hate there means to love less. And so while we love our father and our mother and our wife and our children and our brothers and our sisters and even our own lives, we can't love them more than we love Jesus Christ. We can't place them in front of him and because then those things become an idol to us. So if you answered that, well, how is that possible? How is it possible if I lost all of those things? How is that even possible? Well, I would refer you then to Job, who lost all of his children in virtually all of his possessions in one day. And then on the occasion of another day, just a while later, he lost his health. And yet he did not sin. Shall we not receive good and not accept the loss of those things? The Lord gives, and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And even though his wife encouraged him to curse God and die, he did not do that. Some other passages to consider briefly here with this, what if God takes this away? The first one is Lamentations chapter 3, and it's even the name of the book of Lamentations is a telltale sign of what it's about. In Lamentations 3, 22 and 23, and this is a familiar text to us, Jeremiah writes, "Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. He said, they are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness." And so even in the loss of all things, we still look at God and say, your compassions for me never fail. Your compassion is renewed for me every morning. Another passage in the poetry books in Psalm 42, the 42nd Psalm. And I want you to notice, and again, this is a passage that most of us are familiar with, but I want you to notice the amazing love here that is manifested by the sons of Korah, who are the authors of this. In verse 1, "As the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. Where can I go and meet with God? My tears have been my food day and night, while men say to me all day long, where is your God?" Now, let's stop right there. If tears are your food, you're not laughing. You're not eating sumptuous meals. In fact, the only thing that you are taking in is tears. And he says, "These things I remember as I pour out my soul." This is verse 4 of Psalm 42. "These things I remember as I pour out my soul, how I used to go with the multitude, leading the procession to the house of God with shouts of joy and thanksgiving among the festive throng." He's remembering worship to God and who God is and what God means to him. And then, of course, there is the very famous statement of Paul in Philippians, the first chapter, and verse 21. Where he's talking about the fact that he's in prison, he's doing okay, but he doesn't want them to be worrying about him. And so in verse 21, he says, "For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain." Can we say that honestly? An idolatrous person can't say that, because their God is not going to be with them when they die. And we need to appreciate that. Let me add as well that this question that I've asked you to ask yourself, what if God takes this away? I don't think that that's a question that you need to just have at the forefront of your mind every day of your life. I think it's much better to go ahead and receive the blessings of God and receive them with gratitude and thanksgiving from the very depths of our heart. And most of the time, we need to leave out the what ifs. What if this is gone? What if that takes place? Because you're thinking about getting married. Well, what if she dies? You know, you don't want to color your world by that. But every once in a while, it's a good idea to do a little inventory and self-introspection and recognize that the things that God has given to us, that I need to keep those in balance. I need to make sure that I love the giver more than the gift. And that'll keep things normal for us. And while all four of those things are important in guarding our hearts, from our own perspective, I think that there is one more thing, and perhaps the one thing that's even more important to do, and that is that we need to fill our hearts with Christ. And First Peter, the third chapter, and again, another passage that's just so familiar to us. In First Peter chapter 3 and at verse 15, Peter said, "But in your hearts set apart Christ as Lord." He goes on to say, being ready to give people an answer for the hope that's within you with meekness and with gentleness and respect. But I want to focus in on that first part, that you set apart, that you place Jesus Christ as Lord in your heart, in the very center of your being. And if we keep him on the throne of our lives as king, then there will be no successful assault on our heart by the things of this world. And we won't, there won't be a successful attempt by idolatry to enter our heart. Idolatry can have no place in a heart that's filled with Jesus Christ. So I hope this lesson was encouraging to you. I hope that was helpful. We must, as Solomon said in our text that we're looking here at here, we must give diligence to guard our hearts against these things, and especially guard our hearts against idolatry. Thanks for listening, and we hope you have a great day.